Hi everyone, thanks very much for joining us. And this is the GU ASCO Bayer Ambassador Program meeting. Dr. Steve Yip. I'm a medical oncologist and I work at the Tom Baker Cancer Center. I'm the chair of the Southern Alberta GU Tumor Group, as well as the medical lead of POET. And I'm pleased to be here with Dr. Sebastian Haught. We both attended the 2022 GU ASCO conference from February 17th to the 19th of 2022. And Dr. Sebastian Haught is a medical oncologist in Hamilton, Ontario at McMaster, who has genitourinary specialty. And he'll be discussing with us about the phase three ARASENS trial.
Thank you, Stephen, and great to actually be able to chat with you guys about this a little bit. So the ARASENS trial is really sort of hot off the heels of PEACE one, which surprised everybody at the ESMO meeting a few months ago only. And the ARASENS trial was a clinical trial that looked at darolutamide versus placebo in men with metastatic hormone-sensitive prostate cancer who were receiving docetaxel. Matt Smith presented on behalf of the investigators as one of the oral presentations, and I think probably created most of the splash for at least the prostate cancer sessions. So really what we're dealing with is a phase three randomized trial, one-to-one randomization of darolutamide, 600 milligrams twice daily, in the same way that it was given in ARAMIS in the non-metastatic castrate-resistant setting, plus ADT or placebo twice daily plus ADT in men who were receiving six cycles of docetaxel. 1,305 men were randomized. And the first patient for his visit was in 2016. Last patient for his visit was in mid-2018. So a fair bit of follow-up. We're looking at just under 4 years of follow-up, around 42 to 43 months of follow-up. And I know I think really what's important in this clinical trial is the very important and relevant primary outcome measure of overall survival. These patients had a few different stratification factors. The main one was the extent of disease according to the metastatic status. M1A was non-pelvic visceral non-pelvic lymph node involvement. M1B was bone metastases, and M1C, as most of you know, is visceral disease. And then alkaline phosphatase was another stratification factor. This was done around the time that Charted and Latitude were being either reported or still accruing. So these men were not stratified according to either risk factor, either risk category or disease burden. If you look at the baseline characteristics, really everything was quite balanced. What we're seeing in the red box here is that 80% of men accrued to the trial had bony metastatic disease, and 17 or so percent had visceral metastases. Only about 3 to 4% had non-regional lymph nodes as their site of involvement. So patients that had a fair bit of metastatic disease. Also, most of those men had de novo metastatic disease. So 86% of patients had a M1 disease at presentation. Only about sort of 12 to 13% had M0 disease at presentation. Really, what stands out is that the overall survival primary outcome measure was significantly met, both statistically and also clinically. There was a drop in the reduction of death by 32.5%. And if you're looking at the 4 year mark as a landmark analysis, 62.7, so about 63% of men were still alive at 4 years compared to 50% of men were still alive. So you're looking at a 13, 15% absolute risk reduction at 4 years by adding darolutamide to six cycles of docetaxel. And that's really relating to a number needed to treat in that 7-8 range, which is usually thought of as being quite clinically relevant. This is despite pretty significant differences in subsequent life-prolonging therapies. Those were trials done when we had access to abiraterone and enzalutamide, and the majority of men on the placebo arm that went on to progress did go on to receive a androgen receptor antagonist therapy, such as Abi or enzalutamide. And then a number of patients also had other chemotherapies, such as cabazitaxel. When you're seeing an overall survival improvement in the overall group, you're also looking to see if all the subgroups are meeting the same fate or are getting the same types of results. And really, the subgroup analyses that were done were multiple, but still all of them are showing that darolutamide or patients that received darolutamide fared better than those that did not. Specifically, if you're looking at the extent of disease, so that M1A, 1B, 1C, it didn't really seem to matter whether patients had bony metastases or visceral metastases. They seemed to get the same type of benefit. Similarly, if they were presenting with de novo disease or recurrent disease, they both appeared to have a significant improvement with darolutamide compared to placebo. And that actually is important because there has been some discussion about whether or not patients who have recurrent disease have a lesser aggressive phenotype and therefore potentially can be treated less aggressively. There's a number of key secondary endpoints, time to castrate-resistant prostate cancer and time to first subsequent antineoplastic therapy are a little bit of the same thing. And you're seeing significant improvement there with hazard ratios in the 1.36, 1.35 range. But also there was an improvement in time to pain progression and the time to first skeletal sort of symptomatic skeletal event. There was really no big surprises with regards to toxicity. You know, earlier on, there had been some, there was some toxicities with regards to the docetaxel arm, but with regards to adverse events of special interest, there's really nothing that came out that suggested that docetaxel would make darolutamide less well tolerated or that population fared less well than the patients on Aramis did. And there was very little difference between the darolutamide arm and the placebo arm with regards to toxicities. And then finally, it was the conclusions of Matt Smith that darolutamide in combination with ADT and docetaxel should become a new standard of care for the treatment of these patients with a metastatic hormone-sensitive prostate cancer because of really all the things that I just discussed. And really my perspective in this is that I really do think that triplet therapy should be an option for appropriately selected patients who can tolerate both an ARAT and chemotherapy. But there needs to be a bit more information, hopefully, about which patients benefit the most. And hopefully an analysis of those patients by disease burden will occur and is certainly warranted and hoped for. The fact is, though, that intensification with even a doublet therapy is still uncommon. Some of our Canadian data suggests that less than half those patients receive intensification, and we're seeing that in a number of other international real-world data sets. And it really highlights the need, I think, for multidisciplinary input in these patients. And it, you know, however, it does support the findings from piece one that the addition of an ARAT docetaxel is better than docetaxel alone. What's still unclear, though, is whether the opposite is true. So if someone starts with an ARAT, such as abiraterone or enzalutamide or apalutamide, is there an added benefit of giving docetaxel? And so far, the trials such as Enzamet, where there was a subgroup of patients who got both enzalutamide and a docetaxel, did not seem to have that extra benefit. And then Titan had a very small proportion of men. And in fact, that was presented at this year's GU ASCO by Kim Chi. There again did not seem to be an additive effect of docetaxel when ARAT was given first. So I think that part is still unclear. But all in all, I think it does support that intensification, at least in selected patients, is something that we need to consider.
Thanks very much, Dr. Hutt. I appreciate your insights. And you pretty much answered most, I think, burning questions around this abstract. And you touched upon the interesting landscape that we see where, you know, we're having the results of this trial as well as piece one, largely showing the added benefit of an ARAT2 docetaxel being considered a standard of care, but largely it's the opposite way that we think of things now in the current landscape, where more patients are receiving ARAT as a standard of care, and we're wondering if we should intensify. Do you have any thoughts around why it is that we're seeing other trials like Enzimet and Titan not showing nearly as much of a signal that we'd hope to see when the two are combined, when, you know, the patients are having at baseline ARAT plus ADT plus or minus chemo, rather than the opposite way around with the design of this trial as well as piece one?
Well, the easy answer is no, I don't know, because those trials have not been done and have not been reported, at least in a pragmatic, a priori situation. I think, you know, one can think of a few reasons. One is that the androgen receptor blockers may be more potent, and then you end up having a minimal impact of docetaxel. And the docetaxel, you know, certainly charted showed us is quite potent, but perhaps not quite as much as some of the ARATs. I think what goes against that is, you know, that Eric Small slide that he said, you know, never do, but everybody does, of putting both Latitude and Chartage on top of one another, and showed very similar curves of men treated with abiraterone and men treated with docetaxel in the Chartage and the Latitude trials. This said, I think we don't have those head-to-head comparisons to really tell us. I think the other thing was that, firstly, I don't think we can tell a lot from Titan. You're looking at 60 patients, and I think one cannot and should not draw conclusions out of such a small sample size. And then Enzimet was a little bit different. Enzimet looked at docetaxel given concurrently with enzalutamide, and the toxicity profile was significantly worse in that population. And that might have led to some patient having dose reductions or even stopping treatments like enzalutamide or docetaxel or both. And that could have impacted on a potential survival impact. But at the end of the day, nobody knows.
Exactly. I absolutely agree. And with regards to your comments that you see this as practice changing, how do you see this directly influencing your clinical practice, and how could it pragmatically be implemented by other clinicians who treat advanced prostate cancer in this field, medical oncology, urology in particular, as well as radiation oncology in some circumstances, who see this patient population?
Yeah, I think Arisense did not look at disease burden, as I mentioned earlier, but piece one did, and piece one suggested that the main impact, if not the only impact, was seen in men with higher burden of disease. So I would hope and I would think that at least the majority of those patients with high burden of disease should be referred to medical oncology, or at least discussed in a multidisciplinary setting. And if they're candidates for docetaxel, then have that conversation that we know that the two are better than docetaxel alone. We don't really know the reverse, but if I have a man that's in his 50s or 60s with Gleason 9-10 disease, you know, some worrisome features, PSA is not quite as high as their disease burden would suggest, that I think these men should really be considered and likely recommended to have a triple therapy intensification.
Yeah, I think that it'll be interesting to see how it is implemented across the nation. I think overall, the major question is, how does this impact the overall standard of care? We do have to apply the art of medicine in selecting those patients wisely. And I think that, as you mentioned, we need to be mindful that chemotherapy is something that we have experience as medical oncologists. So it's great if we can at least weigh in from a multidisciplinary discussion. But ideally, you know, having this thought of and giving patients the benefit of, at the very least, the consideration of this treatment. How do you find the possibilities of patients who perhaps might have already been seen by another multidisciplinary specialist who might have initiated ADT plus or minus an ARAT, and they're already on that course, and the possibility of introducing chemotherapy afterwards obviously doesn't exactly adhere to this trial, but just thinking of things from a pragmatic perspective, you know, a lot of us are a little bit cautious, even with chemotherapy alone, not immediately throwing 100% dose at a person. How do you think that you'd approach those clinical scenarios?
Yeah, I think that's, again, when you're starting to delve into the arts of medicine and the pragmatic aspect of oncology. If I was a purist, I'd say, well, I really don't know how to treat those men, because the data is not based on these presentations. However, I tend to wait a little bit before I start the docetaxel anyways when an ADT is started, because we know that the first month or two of ADT does usually pretend to slightly worse toxicity in for docetaxel. And I think it's fairly much the same. So if the patient comes in and has had a month or two of an ARAT and have all of these you know, less positive features or concerning features that we talked about, I still would have no concerns in at least having a conversation about adding docetaxel. Now, it's still not yet funded. I think, you know, docetaxel is fairly cheap and it's becoming a lot more easy to receive in many provinces. In Ontario, I think it's going to be, or it is delisted. And so I think there's a little bit more laxity in us being able to give it. But I still think that will be also dictating what we can and cannot do as to with regards to whether it is funded or not in your province.
Certainly. Yeah, well, appreciate your insights. Thanks again, Dr. Hott. And thank you again for joining us for this discussion around this potentially clinically practice-changing trial that, at the very least, begs the question of considering your patient for this potential treatment. Thanks very much. Have a good evening.
Thank you very much.